He is one of my favorite human beings. He is Eddie Olczyk, and he is going to pop on the program today. Go a long way back with Edzo, but we're not going to necessarily talk memories, although we kind of do get into that today. Stanley Cup playoffs. So what a start to the first round with sweeps by Colorado and Winnipeg, the surprising part of that. And Eddie's got some comments about what the Edmonton Oilers will do with the next step. And he's got a dream job. And he's going to his next dream job. I don't even know how to explain that, but it's Eddie Olczyk next on The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Got hot. Well, once going twice, sold. Got a hot.
You guys are sensitive over there.
What are you going to do? You!
Shut up!
Spring turning to summer. That's my way of turning up the heat, the temperature on the Stanley Cup playoffs. We have NBC's top analyst, Eddie Olczyk, on The Chirp. It's his second appearance on The Chirp. The first version I did way back when on my own. Now I'm partnered with the National Hockey League, and Eddie is a return guest on this podcast. And you are going to really enjoy this conversation because we're going to go through that crazy result in the North between Edmonton and Winnipeg and the sweep by the Jets. Edmonton is a topic because, boy, when the best player in the world gets swept against an opponent that they dominated in the regular season, there's conversation, and Eddie does not hold back. And he's a former Jet, and he's got some great love for Winnipeg. I'm from Manitoba, so we kind of go down that path a little bit. So we'll chat about that. Three goalies in the National Hockey League playoffs. That's something that's happening on a couple of different fronts. Joel Quenneville is somebody that Eddie knows really well. So we'll touch on the Florida situation. And as well, his pending move to Turner for next year. And Eddie has signed on with the Turner Broadcasting Company and Warner. And what an amazing opportunity for him. And he's got a new teammate. Just happens to be the greatest player of all time in Wayne Gretzky. We actually had this conversation planned, and then the Gretzky stuff happened, so it's perfect. And he tells a great story about Wayne Gretzky. So we're going to go down this wandering path, and it is a wandering path, with Eddie Olczyk on The Chirp with Darren Millard. This is fun. Great time of the year, isn't it, Ed? So this first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, even though it's a little unique compared to where we were a year ago, it's kind of cool. Fans in Canada, still not there, but we've got some cool buildings going on right now.
Yeah, it really is, Darren. It's, you know this, I know this. We have the greatest fans in all of sports, and for them to, for a lot of them, not all of them, but for most of them, getting the opportunity to get back into these buildings. And it really does have a different feel. Like, I didn't start doing games this year with fans in the building until probably the last 6 or 7 weeks. And even if it was at a capacity of 2,000 or 3,000, it was like a celebration, you know, like you just had our great fans back and entertaining. And look, at the end of the day, we know what's still going on in the real world, and we know what everybody has been living through here the last year and a half or whatever it is, but to allow them to just get away from the real world for a couple of hours and just kind of let their hair down and be back in buildings. And I know the coaches and the players and the referees, believe it or not, are feeding off the energy. And now you got buildings that are wall to wall, arm in arm, and booing the other team and booing the referees. It's like, wow, this is what we missed. And it's a lot of fun to be in a lot of these buildings with, you know, with 8,000-10,000 fans inside these buildings while I'm broadcasting.
It hit me when the crowd cheered for a clear on the penalty kill. And I thought, well, that is so great. You don't take that in every day.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what the teams tried to do, Darren, as you know, and in the National Hockey League, is to try to make it as normal as possible for the players and the coaches and the referees by, you know, having, you know, push button noise effects and crowd effects and the boos and the cheers. And but to see the fans reacting, you know, the hockey IQ of a lot of our fans is off the charts. And to know that, hey, you know, appreciation for a shot blocking situation. I was in Boston a couple of games ago for the Caps and Bruins, and Connor Clifton, young defenseman for the Boston, he had like three shot blocks in a matter of about 35 seconds. And the place was going up for grabs. And then when he got back to the bench, he had Marchand there patting him on the back. You had Pastrnak there. You had the coaches there. I mean, it was just like one of those scenes where, like, the fans appreciate it. And then it just kind of rolled over to the guys on the bench to really let that player know, even though he couldn't feel his ankle for about 2 months, you know, I mean, that's just what you do playoff hockey. So it's fun to have the fans back in the building for a lot of different reasons.
We're all excited about potentially seeing a couple of great matchups as we go along here. But one thing we will not get to witness will be Edmonton and Connor McDavid against Austin Matthews and the Toronto Maple Leafs because of that scenario that played out between the Winnipeg Jets. So you're a big horse racing guy, and I love your work on the Triple Crown. And I do, because I lean on you for different things through text. But where would you put that upset in horse racing terms of what Winnipeg just did with a sweep?
Yeah. I mean, look, I saw Edmonton in the bubble last year. And again, the bubble wasn't for everybody, Darren. It really wasn't, right? Like, we stopped our season in what, March, early mid-March, whatever it was. And then you had all that time off until the teams got back together for, you know, mini training camp. And then they went into the bubble, right? And I saw Edmonton play Chicago in those prelims. And look at that. They were awful. I mean, they couldn't check their hat. I mean, that's how poor they played. Now, there were some players that excelled. There were some teams that excelled, and there were some teams that didn't. I think, in fairness, Edmonton might not have been one of those teams. Now, look at the regular season that they had. I was surprised at how well Edmonton played during the course of the regular season. My question mark was, could their big guys step up at the most crucial time come playoff time? And then secondly, and probably more importantly, do they have the defensive depth, and do they have the depth up front that the rink gets a little smaller, right, Darren, in playoffs? Yeah. The rink, I've always said, the rink shrinks. And when the rink shrinks, it feels like the other team has six or seven guys on the ice. So the room is not there what it is like during the regular season. And I think for Edmonton, their glaring holes stood out. Now, look, they probably deserved a better in a game or two, but that's playoff hockey. And look, they were facing, in my opinion, the second best goaltender in the world, and that's Connor Hellebuyck for the Winnipeg Jets. And he gave his team an opportunity at times when they were being outplayed, and he was able to shut them down. But, you know, I mean, yeah, it's an upset without question. But I think that the Winnipeg Jets proved that the depth up front that they had forced Edmonton to defend maybe a little bit more than they were used to. And the back end really came together. And look, that was probably the weakness of the Winnipeg Jets going in. And you think about the Jets, you know this, Darren. A couple of years ago, I would have put the Winnipeg Jets top six in the top five in the entire National Hockey League. Yeah. When you go back and look at the guys that they had, and, you know, in Trouba, in Bufflin, and in Sherratt, and, you know, on and on. I mean, like, they had the defense on the back end that could compare with a lot of teams, in the top teams in the National Hockey League. And all of a sudden, you know, players got traded, players didn't resign, Big Buff retires, Dustin Bufflin. So the question mark was, did they have enough defense? And I think that was a fair question, but they proved against, you know, one of the better offensive teams, and obviously a couple of the great players we have in the league, they were able to limit the damage that they were able to do, and then eventually win game four in triple overtime. So upset for sure, but I'm not sitting there saying that it's, you know, it's on the scales of the San Jose Sharks back in the, you know, in the late 80s, yeah, right, Red Wings, or the early 90s, whatever that was. So, but it was pretty special to watch. And look, being a Jet alum, not once, but twice, and playing almost six of my 16 years in the peg, it's always good to see them have success. And again, I just only wish the great fans in Winnipeg could have been able to be in that building for both of those games, especially game three, Darren, when they're down 4-1 with 9.5 minutes left to go. The wagering odds were off the charts. It was like, you know, 20,000 for Edmonton. Yeah, he had to lay like 20,000 to win 100 because they, you know, they had the commanding lead, and all of a sudden it won. It's 4-2. And I was sitting with my son, Nick, and we were watching the game, and he loves the Winnipeg Jets. And I looked at him at 4-2, and I said, you know what? If I was Dave Tippett right now, like, I was coaching in the NHL a long time ago, but I'd sit there and go, you know what? I got to use my timeout here, Darren. I got to slow this game down. Or you have one of your players go tell Mike Smith, hey, blow a strap. You know, call the trainer out on it. We got to slow this thing down. And he did it. And I know it was a power play goal. I understand that, but it's just, I felt it like, uh-oh. And then it got to 4-3, and I'm like, he's got to call a timeout now. Like, you got to do something. And all of a sudden it's 4-3. And then what, 18 seconds later, whatever it was, the puck ends up in the back of the net. So incredible theater. Great to see. And look at, when you got goaltending, Darren, as the great Doc Emmerich and I used to say for 14 years working together for NBC, if you got it, that being goaltending, you got a shot. If you don't have it, that being goaltending, you have no shot. Winnipeg's got a shot because they got Connor Hellebuyck.
Well, and Tip thought he could get to that TV timeout and he'd be okay. And I don't blame him for that, but boy, that's how fine the edge is.
I mean, look at, you only get one, right? And to me, you know, you can't, they don't accumulate. Like, you can't use two the next game. Like, you might as well get rid of it when you think. I understand. I think a lot of, I've had this conversation, look, and I lived it too, but I've had this conversation with some of the best coaches that our league has ever seen, in particular a guy like Joel Quenneville. And I think, again, this is my wording, not Joel's, but it's almost that aspect of, okay, you know, what is the message that you're sending to your team when you do use your timeout, like the big picture, right? Mm-hmm. And I understand that because I lived it as a player and I lived it as a coach, but I think that you got to know that momentum swings in the NHL are aplenty. And when you got it, what do you do with it? And we saw what Winnipeg did with it. And when you don't have it, Darren, what the hell, and it's against you, what the hell do you do to stop it? And there are very few things that you can do. And I just thought at that particular time, it was just one of those things that you have a gut feeling and go, this thing's got a chance to go sideways really, really quick. And even without the crowd, they were still able to feed off of one another. And just one of the, you know, look at, I know that game between San Jose and Vegas a couple of years ago was pretty crazy in that game 7 and everything that took place with Joe Pavelski and everything else. But like that game, that game 3 between Winnipeg and Edmonton, that one will go down for a long, long time. And you just don't know how history changes when you have a game like that, Darren. You really don't. And history is great for one thing, and that's learning from it. And I'm sure there's a great learning lesson, you know, whether you're on the winning side or losing side. But as a fan, that was one hell of a game.
Did you send your buddy Craig Heisinger a note?
I always talk to Dinger. And he actually shot me a text on Saturday afternoon. I was doing the Islanders Penguins game on NBC, and Matthew Barzal, I think there were two chances where like the light was never greener for him to shoot the puck, and he tried to pass the puck both times. And you know, I just like, I don't say I lost it on the air, but I was just like, man, oh man, just please shoot the puck, because if you don't, I will, you know. And sure enough, Patrick Sharp, who was in studio, I said, yeah, you know what, Barzal better shoot that puck or Edzo's going to come out of the booth with his old red Titan 2020 and he's going to shoot the puck. So, you know, and then Zinger texts me, he goes, I think that young pup there was taking a shot at your wood stick back in the day. And as I told Zinger, Darren, wood is good. And all I know is that Wayne Gretzky, oh, by the way, scored 92 goals with a wood stick. So it's not the stick, it's the sticky, it's the person that's holding it. So, but Matthew Barzal eventually shot the puck in that game. He didn't score, but so that's kind of the roundabout story, how Zinger was sticking up for his former player. As he was my trainer for many, many moons, and now the assistant general manager for Chevy, Kevin Cheveldayoff, and Winnipeg Jets.
You know firsthand how the inferiority complex of Manitobans with that great Edmonton team in the Smythe division can't get over. Yeah. And I was on the record in this podcast last week saying, I won't believe it until it actually happens, that Winnipeg can be the best player in the world who plays for Edmonton when that happens. Like, what do you think the mood around the franchise and the mood around the city and the province of Manitoba to be able to do something like what they did?
Off the charts. Now there is great belief, right? Because look at, quite frankly, most people thought that the Jets just did not have enough depth on the back end. And I think that's fair. I think that was a very fair assessment. And then you're going up against Edmonton. But again, if you watch the Oilers and you saw them play last year in a bubble, and again, you know, I put that in parentheses, you know, Winnipeg had a chance, because playoff hockey is much different than it is in the regular season. I mean, what the hell is going to happen in Edmonton now? I mean, look at you. You got, I mean, two huge monumental losses the last couple of years when you really look at it. I mean, there's no other way around it. I mean, they failed miserably. And I'm sure there's got to be changes, and I don't know what Kenny can do as far as their cap situations and everything that's going on there. But I think for Winnipeg, people probably up all night and celebrating and going, you know what, we hope the Habs can find a way to extend that series and get to seven games and let the Leafs go into triple overtime with the Habs in game seven. And we're going to be sitting here resting and waiting to get back in there. So, but I know, like, I lots of, as you do as well, Darren, I mean, many family and friends in that area, and they're smiling ear to ear. There's no doubt about it, because I think that there was some question mark whether or not that they could take out Edmonton. And think about how good of teams that they've had there the last couple of years and not able to get it done. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, look at everything we've all lived through here over the last year and a half. I can't remember last year, the year before, whatever it is, but remember them playing St. Louis, and it might've been the year St. Louis won the Stanley Cup, right?
Yeah.
Winnipeg, St. Louis comes to Winnipeg their first two games, because I think Winnipeg had home ice. St. Louis wins both games in Winnipeg, you know, and like everybody's like this. And all of a sudden Winnipeg goes back to St. Louis and they win both games, right? Like, it was just absolutely crazy. And I think, you know, and it ended up going seven games. And I think Jaden Schwartz scored a crazy goal late in the game, and I think that ended up being the game winner. But, you know, they just weren't able to just take that next step with the teams that they had. And all of a sudden they get their opportunity here, and now they're in the, you know, division championship, and, you know, one step away from getting to the Final Four of the National Hockey League.
So off this upset, we go back in the day to when you and I were there. Are we going to the Marble Club or are we going to the PAL? Where are we going to celebrate?
You know, I'd probably be going to Grapes. Probably Grapes. Or I, you know what? Maybe I'd be going to Earl's and get a nice slab of ribs and a big chocolate milkshake, man. They used to have the great milkshakes in those big silver tins at Earl's. And that's where Eddie Olczyk and the lovely, talented Diana Olczyk would frequent after games. And I really, Darren, you know, I mean, I love playing in Winnipeg. I mean, look, I played in my hometown for 5 years. So, I mean, I lived the dream of playing for the Blackhawks, my first game, my 1,000th game, and my last game, and a whole boatload of games in between. But Winnipeg was just one of those places where just kind of felt like it became a part of the fabric of the community. And, you know, we just had one, you know, we had one resident. We not like today's players where they have two, three residents. And all of a sudden when the season's over, most players get the hell out of town and don't really spend time in that city. But, you know, I lived there almost 6 full years, and we really enjoyed it, and something that I'll be very proud of, that it played for the Jets, the original Jets, I guess I should say, with that little hiatus in Atlanta for a period of time.
Well, you and Dee can swing by the PAL, and I'll leave your name at the door, because that's where I'll be at. What do you think happens in Edmonton? Because they've changed management, they've changed coaches. I don't see that happening again, but who knows? Do they split up the big two? I don't know.
Yeah. I look at that's a fair question. You look at how the team is so top heavy. With, you know, with those guys, what do you do with Nugent Hopkins? Could he be in play, you know, for a move or whatever? And I think his contract's actually up this year. So, I mean, that certainly plays into it. You know, the back end, I thought Nurse really improved a lot this year. Darnell Nurse on the back end really, you know, really liked the way that he took a step. Now, can he be the guy? I think the question, you know, I think the jury's still out in my opinion, but, you know, like Mike Smith had a hell of a year. Like I did not see that coming at all. I really didn't, but look at some tough decisions there, because, you know, you got a guy, you know, you got a guy in his prime. And, you know, I caught a lot of heat at the start of the season, Darren, when, you know, I was asked who's the best player in the National Hockey League, you know, coming out of the bubble and then coming into the start of the season. And I had no hesitation. I mean, I said it was Nathan MacKinnon. Like I saw him play last year and really become a 200-foot player and especially in the bubble. Like I just, it caught my attention. It really did. And look at Connor McDavid's, like he's a world-class player. Look at the MVP of the regular season is going to be Connor McDavid. But at the most crucial times, if you just look at the teams that have won and the teams that over the, you know, the course of time, you know, the great, great players have the ability to be able to will their teams and find a way. And look, it's not an individual's game. We understand that, but the great, great players, especially come playoff time, have that ability to really kind of push the envelope and get their teams, you know, to win a round, to get to the next round and really become a threat. And to this point, it hasn't been able to happen. So, you know, got to improve the depth for sure. The back end to me is still a major question mark. Now, you know, losing Klefbom too, let's full disclosure. I mean, not having Oscar Klefbom last year and obviously being out, and hopefully he is healthy first and foremost as a human being. Don't worry about the hockey part of it. That's a huge loss there. But big question mark. So look at it. If I'm involved there and I got the hat on there, Darren, I think anything could be on the table. That'd be my opinion, because we haven't been able to do it with what we have right now. So, you know, what options do we have? And, you know, look at, I think you open up every phone line you have and try to figure this thing out. And, you know, I don't know, maybe, you know, when's the last hockey player that pulled an NBA move, which seems to be every other week, right? Where you sit there and go, you know what? I don't want to be here and I want to go to Anaheim or I want to go to Dallas, right? I mean, that doesn't happen in the NHL. I mean, it really doesn't. Like, Eric Lindros is probably the guy, but I mean, he hadn't even been in a league yet and he, you know, he did what he did, right? So sometimes you get players that will force some hands, but I'm talking, you know, like the really, really great players, doesn't happen very often. Now, obviously Gretz, when he left Edmonton and went to LA, but NBA, it seems like it happens, you know, every week. I want to go play in Brooklyn and, you know, or I want to go to LA or so. You know, it'll be interesting to see if we have any of today's players that have the courage and let's see, how do I say this politically correct? To put their plums on the table and sit there and go, you know what? I'm not coming back unless, or we do this. And then you force the team's hand, because it seems to happen in other sports, but it really hasn't kind of gotten into the National Hockey League, which I think is a good thing. But I think every once in a while you'd sit there and go, wow, what kind of drama would that be if somebody, you know, one of the elite players just went in there and said, no, I'm not coming back until you trade me. You know, by the way, isn't it happening right now? It looks like a little bit of theater and drama in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers right now. So, you know, maybe it happens in the NHL at some point, but if it does, I'm sure the chirp will be all over it if that indeed does happen.
I'm just going to pause there so I can use that as a promo clip for Bob and company. When you say everything's on the table, do you mean from the organization as well, making changes, or the players as well?
Well, no, I think you have to look at it. I mean, I'm sure for Mr. Nicholson and the entire organization, Kenny, all the way through, I think you sit there and you pull back the you pull back the curtain and you look at everything, and you know how you know it is. Finishing, you know, again, now we're going to go back to normal, whatever that is. We're going to go back to divisional play next year. So, I mean, it is going to be, you know, go back to, you know, life is it would be, you know, throughout the National Hockey League, assuming that the Canadian border opens at some point here in the next little while, and hopefully it will. But I think that you have to have that conversation. I could just speak from experience, and look, when I coached in Pittsburgh back in 2003, I mean, we were right in the middle of a rebuild. Like, we got rid of any talented player that we had, and we were going to build through the draft. And, you know, we traded some really, really good players. I mean, and you have a plan, but I think that when you sit there and you're transparent, you really have to take a look at it. It's like each organization does this. Where we are, is that good enough? Like, do we have, you know, the pieces to be able to take that step and really make a serious run? And only the Oilers can really answer that. So I think you do. I think especially the way you lose too, I think probably makes it even more with a microscope, Darren. But, you know, look at the last 2 years, like I said, losing to Chicago in the bubble and then obviously getting swept by Winnipeg. I think you really got to take a step back and you open everything up and you have that transparency and try to figure the thing out.
Connor has to wear some of this, but would you blame him if he stepped up and made his voice heard?
I don't know him well enough. I've always had a couple of great conversations with Connor McDavid. I mean, he's a I mean, he's a super young man, and obviously, you know, I mean, a lot is asked of him to, you know, to be one of the faces of the National Hockey League, and, you know, kind of taking that torch from Sid, you know, so to speak. But look at that. There's full complement of blame to go around. And certainly when you're as good as he is and you're not able to win, I mean, people are going to start questioning you, and rightfully so. That comes with the salary, that comes with being the leader, that comes with being the leading scorer in the league. But I don't know that, you know, I don't know the dynamic, but certainly look at, there are, let me say this, and we talked about it a little earlier, there are very few players in the league, in my opinion, that could pull that off. To go in and say, look at, this is what I see, this is what we need. And if you're not going to oblige, well, then you know what? Get me the hell out of here. And there's only a couple. And in my opinion, there are only a couple players that could do that. I'm saying players that are under contract.
Yeah.
The team has them over a barrel. They could do that. But again, we don't see it very often in the National Hockey League. But, you know, look at today's players are different than they were 10 years ago, and certainly from my era going back 30 years now, much different animal, much different philosophy on a lot of things. And, you know, would it surprise me if, you know, if any player does it? Yeah, it probably would, but I think we'd all like to see how the team reacts and how the player reacts and you go from there. Look at Darren, you know, I mean, there have been players, you know, lots of players that demand trades, right? I mean, I think Sam Bennett's one guy that came in and I thought that was one guy. Look at, if I was sitting in that chair at the trade deadline and I was a team that was vying for a playoff spot, like I would have went out and got Sam Bennett, because I think he's the type of player that helps you win. Like can he be the guy? No, I don't think he can, but he can certainly be one of the guys, and he's played really well down in Florida. I think Joel Quenneville hits him right between the eyes on the type of coach, because Joel is around the perimeter. Joel is black, white, right? Like it's this way or that way. That's it. Like there's no more. And I think a guy like Sam Bennett is going to, you know, certainly flourish, in a heck of a trade there by Bill Zito, in my opinion, to get a guy like Bennett, who again, is he a top line guy? No. Can he be an effective second to third line player and play center and wing? 100%. We've seen, you know, rumors said that he asked for a trade earlier and eventually he got it and ended up in Florida. It looks like he's in a pretty good spot.
Colorado is through. In the minimum. That was a brilliant series. There's a couple of teams that can beat them. That's it. They're so good. But how much will the absence of Nazem hurt the Colorado Avalanche in round two?
Yeah. Wow. Center ice position. Let me just say this. I thought what separated Colorado from everybody else was the depth at the center ice position. Now, when you pull out a guy like Kadri for an extended period of time, and again, I know there's an appeal out there, so it'd be really interesting to see how this all kind of plays out with him missing, mm-hmm. Two games right now? So
So
right now, if his appeal is rejected, okay, so it's six games. Like, that's a big loss. But the one thing that they do have, that being Colorado, is they do have Nathan MacKinnon. And they have depth at the center ice position. So it's kind of, you know, by committee, you know, because you got Comfer there, you know, you got Belmar there, you know, Donskoy can play a little center. Saad's a pretty good center iceman. He's had a few opportunities, but I know when he played in Chicago that he played the center ice position. So, I mean, look, it's a loss. Like, you can't. I don't know if you can replace a guy like that, but a team like Colorado, you know, has the depth, and, you know, Landeskog can certainly move over. So I think there's a lot of moves there for Jared Bednar, the head coach of the Avalanche, Darren, where, you know, you could move things around if it becomes, you know, if it's an extended series and you don't have them. But, you know, to me, I thought that's where I saw the difference between Colorado and Vegas was at the center ice position. Because, look, when you look at the goaltending, you sit there and go, well, you know, I probably give the slight edge to Vegas. Like, you know, just a slight edge. Now, the best defense in the world is when you have the puck, and Colorado seems to have the puck all the time. So Grubauer, I mean, you know, is he getting tested as much as other guys, right? The back ends, I mean, look, it's probably a flip of a coin. Like, I would just give it to Colorado just because of the Cale Makar factor. But then when I looked at the forwards, goal scoring and stuff, I'm like, you know, again, not, you know, not knowing what's going on with Patches, right? Max Pacioretty, who I've known since he was 17 years old when he played with my oldest son, Eddie, in the USHL with the Sioux City Musketeers. So I've seen Patches for forever, you know. Now he's got, what, he's got five kids, right? I mean, oh, he's got his own team going, right? So, like, I looked at the goal scoring and go, you know, like, you got Stone, who I think is the most underrated player in the NHL. Like, I love Mark Stone. I mean, I just unbelievable player. And you got Patches there, and Riley Smith and Marchessault, guys that just, they find a way on the biggest stage. So I looked at the goal scoring on both teams and go, I don't know. I would give a check mark on both sides. But then where, to me, where it the check mark went completely in Vegas was at the center ice position. Like, that's the one thing I think for Vegas is that, you know, like that to me, like, William Karlsson for sure is a probably a two for sure, 100%. Could he play in a one spot? Yeah, because he's skilled and, he, you know, and yeah. But I don't know, you know, Chandler Stephenson is a top two center iceman over the course of the most important time of the season. Like, he's filled in very well and can really skate. But I just thought that the center ice position was dominated by Colorado, and that's why I gave them the check mark, just looking at those two teams, assuming that those teams are going to collide at some point here in the playoffs. But that's kind of where I just kind of gave Colorado the edge, was because of the center ice position.
That's a series that we're all looking forward to if it happens. And at this recording, we don't know.
Aaron, I'm just saying, like, I think that'll be the series of the playoffs. If indeed it does come to fruition. Now look at Minnesota. Like, Dean Evason there has done, first of all, let me take a step back. For as much heat that Paul Fenton got, the former general manager, before Billy Guerin took over, you look at some of the moves that Fenner made in Minnesota, right? Like, he brought in Zuccarello, who has hit it off with Kaprizov. Mm-hmm. He brought in Ryan Hartman, who has become an important part at the center ice position there. Like, two free agent signings there that really have taken their team to another level, right? Billy G comes in, he brings in a guy like Ian Cole, who has won a couple of Stanley Cups. He makes the decision to move out Bruce Boudreau for Dean Evason. And he signs Cam Talbot, who is, I mean, the guy is looks unbeatable at times, right? Like, I mean, he played really good early in the series against Vegas, right? And yeah, he struggled in the last couple of games in, you know, games 3 and 4 back home. But you look at the job that these managers have done, and I think don't underestimate the decision by Billy Guerin to move out Bruce Boudreau and give the opportunity to Dean Evason. I talked to Billy G about that, and he had no relationship with Dino. He had no relationship at all. And he just felt that it was the right thing to do. And look at, I voted for Dean Evason, full disclosure. I voted him for a coach of the year. I did. I voted for him, Mike Sullivan, and Joe Quenneville. I'm going to throw it out there. Now, if you would maybe a colleague of mine or two, maybe on the chirp, and you would ask him, he would probably say he voted for, you know, on one show, he'd say, I voted for these three, and another, I voted for all these three, and making sure that all the coaches probably that I voted for them at least once. But anyways, I digress. I just think, like, with Minnesota, like, there's a great belief. You got the back end there that's playing all the, Jonas Brodin, all of a sudden, I mean, this guy looked like he was, looked like he was going to be out of mini, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and all of a sudden, now this guy is a ice-eating muncher. I mean, the guy has played like he did 5 years ago. So, you know, you got Suter on the back end, you got Dumba back there, you got Spurgeon. Look at it, this, you know, the VGK is in for a battle here, right? I mean, in this series. And but I think that we all assumed or thought, once we saw the divisional play, and all due respect to the St. Louis Blues, is that it was probably going to be the Knights and the Avalanche at some point here in this playoff. And if it happens, I think that'll be the playoff of the series, and all due respect to all the other teams out there.
And full disclosure, Dean Evason's older brother, Heavy, was my minor hockey coach, the greatest mentor of my life in my hockey life. So I love the Evason family.
I don't know it all. Like, you know, look at, I mean, he played with a lot of played with the great Ronnie Francis. Ronnie Francis, one of my closest brothers, of course, the man who is now running the Seattle Kraken with the, he's working He has the smartest Olczyk working for him now as the VP and general manager, my brother, Ricky. If you ask Ricky that, he would be able to justify that and give his lawyer speak and give some kind of a crazy word that I've never heard before, just to make sure that we all know that he is the smartest one. But let's not forget the job that Ronnie and Ricky did in Carolina. Like, they really, you know, a lot of their fingerprints and handprints are all over that team, and they've had a hell of a season under under Rod Brind'Amour. So I know, you know, look at, I know a lot of guys that played with Dino and have great respect for him. And he was always a tough player to play against. And he looks like he's a, he has that same look on his face as he did for as many years as he played in the National Hockey League. So they've had a hell of a year there in Mini, and looks, and that Kaprizov too, boy, oh man, a kid looks like he's going to be a star for many, many years. And that, look at that chemistry with Zuccarello. I mean, unbelievable. I mean, that game, let's see, I'm trying to think. Game five, the pass that Zuccarello made, I mean, like Zuccarello, the patience he had, like that, I mean, that was just like a brilliant play. And just to be able to see it at real speed and then go back and watch it, and you sit there and goes, how in the hell did he wait, and then pass the puck through three Vegas Knight defenders? Chandler Stephenson, I mean, I think he fell over. He couldn't believe that he passed the puck in behind him. And then Kaprizov goes short side on the flower. So they got a lot of good things going on, and they got a couple of kids coming from my understanding. So Minnesota's not going anywhere moving forward. So they're going to be real tough. They're going to be a tough out in the, assuming we get back to the Central Division at some point here.
You know, Joel, how surprised are you, and whether it works or not, it extended the series, going three deep with his goaltending?
Nothing surprises me with Joel. You know, look at, he get all the papers, he'll get all the analytics, he'll get all the whatever. But I think for him, a lot of it comes from right here, right? Like he in the experience he has, right? And you know, look at, yeah, Bob was, you know, he was good in game one, but he couldn't make the stops late on, you know, on Braden Point there, one on a power play and then a breakaway late in the game. And then, you know, he made the change and brought in Drieger, and now he goes to Spencer Knight and they live to fight another day. So when you have the resume of a guy like Joel Quenneville, you can pretty much do what the hell you want. And I don't think there's going to be many people that question him. And, you know, look at Florida's had they've had a hell of a season. Like Billy Zito did a hell of a job in the off season and, you know, picking up a guy like Wenberg, you traded for Montour. You know, I mentioned the Bennett trade. You've gotten some depth on the back end. Now look at losing Aaron Ekblad was just, I mean, it was colossal because I never seen him play as well as he did. Now, last year wasn't a great year, you know, prior to the pandemic, but this year he was, you know, he was in a talk for the Norris Trophy, Darren. I don't know what you thought by watching Aaron Ekblad. And then unfortunately he got hurt. I think it was in Dallas that game. And, you know, it just kind of makes you sick to your stomach anytime you see a player get, you know, get hurt like that. But that doesn't surprise me to see Joel to what he's done. And look at, if he needed to go four deep, I'm not sure if Bobby Lou is available or if he's even, I think he might be over in the World Championships. I don't think he's available, but if Bobby Lou was available and Joel felt he was the best option, Joel would put his plums on the table, and he is a horse player too. So, you know, he'd say, you know what, this is the guy that gives me the best shot. I don't care that Bob's making 9+ and not, you know, hey, whatever I think I'm going to do to play, to win, and Joel will be able to do it. So I'm not surprised at all.
You've got the new job coming in the fall. How important was it to still be able to do the racing in conjunction with the Turner?
Well, it was certainly a big part of it. And, you know, the relationship between my current boss, Sam Flood at NBC Sports and the relationship he has with Jeff Zucker, who oversees you know, Warner Media and Turner Sports. So for me, it was important to have that flexibility to continue to do horse racing. There's nothing for sure, but it seems like the opportunity might present itself down the road. But just very lucky and blessed to have been in that position and to have the door still be open with, you know, something that I love to do. And look, NBC gave me a great chance to be a part of the horse racing coverage over the course of the last 7 years. I've seen two triple crowns, Darren, and up close and personal working. I've been also doing the games and working with the great Doc Emrick for 14 years in the lead chair for NBC. And now this year doing the games with Kenny on NBC. And then we're both going to go over and be on the lead team for Turner. So very excited and it'll be a great challenge because we're starting from scratch, right? Because Turner has no hockey background, but all I know is the way that they do their business in the real world. And they do in the way they do their business for basketball and for the MLB. I think that we're going to do just fine and just looking to continue to do the greatest game in the world for the next handful of years.
What impressed you when they called?
Well, I think getting, the initial contact from Jeff Zucker and mm-hmm. from Tara August, Tara oversees all of the contracts and talent, at Turner, and obviously Jeff runs everything over there on the news side and on the sports side. So I think that initial contact was I don't want to say it stopped me in my tracks, but certainly got my attention to where I was like, okay, I don't see us being any other place. And they were very forthright in the interest from day one. So I think when you get that call from Jeff Zucker and Tara August, it meant a lot. And my agent Lou Oppenheim was we knew he wasn't going to be off the phone for very long once the dialogue started to happen. So, look, I haven't been a free agent, Darren, since late in my career after being in Pittsburgh in '97. 98, and then not knowing what was going to happen, and eventually a free agent to come back home and finish my last 2 years in Chicago. So to be back in that boat was certainly it was intimidating, it was exhilarating, it was nice to have some leverage, but not knowing what was going to happen, but understanding the real world that we're living in, and a lot of great talented people out there. Just wanted to act very quickly and know that there are only so many seats at the table. And I didn't want to play duck, duck, goose and get caught without a seat. But I just very, very fortunate. But I think just the initial contact that was very impressive to me. And I'm not surprised because knowing people that have worked at Turner for a long, long time know how they do their business. And they're very, very family and very people orientated corporation. And that meant a lot to me and my wife and my family. And I just kind of thought I knew it was just a matter of time, hoping that we can get it done. And we have, and I know where I'm going to be for the next 5 years. So I'm very excited.
So did you call Gretz or did Gretz call you and say, hey, what's going on over there?
Yeah, no. I'm not sure if Gretz even knows who I am, but, he'll probably remember the time I was a rookie in the NHL and we were like, I was 18 playing for my hometown team and in the 85 playoffs. Now again, go back in 1985, like we're playing the Edmonton Oilers in the conference finals. So the Chicago Blackhawks, my hometown team, we're 4 wins away from going to the Stanley Cup final in my rookie year. Now, if you go back in history, you sit there and go, you guys were playing the 85 Oilers. Like you had no chance. Like, I mean, you had 75 Hall of Famers on the ice. You had, Slatt standing behind the bench. You had Mr. Muckler there. And you're like, yeah, that's not going to happen, right? So we played them in the conference finals. Don't quote me, Darren, but I think we lost the first game like 12-3. And then we lost the second game like 10-4, 10-5. We come home. The old Chicago Stadium is up for grabs. Now, look at it. We just lost two games by like 20 goals. Most people gave us no chance. So we come back to the old Chicago Stadium. I'm skating around in warmups. And like, I'm a Chicago guy. Like, I'm like, I used to go to games here, right? Like, I was at the game when Roger Neilson had the white flag there when he was coaching the Canucks there, right? Like, I mean, I remember that. And I'm like, wow, look at me, man. I'm living the dream. So I'm skating around in warmups. And then we come up right before the national anthem and the stadium is up for grabs. Like, let's just put this out there. No building in the history of the NHL was or will be ever louder than Chicago Stadium. Okay, that's fact. My opinion, but it's mm-hmm. fact. So I'm skating around before the start of the game, and the place is up for grabs. As I'm skating around the far corner away from the bench, I look into the corner, and I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm skating around, and I'm going back, and I'm going like, that's Gale Sayers. That's the Kansas Comet. I'm like, what? I mean, one of the greatest Bears ever, one of the greatest athletes ever. And I'm skating around, and there's Gale Sayers clapping in the corner, and he's sitting four rows up. And I skated by him. I just kind of looked at him. I'm like, I know who he is because I'm a Chicago guy. And he's just like, he's just clapping. He's so into it. And as I skated by him, I'm just like, man, this must be a pretty big game. Like Gale Sayers is in this game. So lo and behold, I think we win like 7-5 and then we win like 6-2. So it's 2-2 going back to Edmonton for game 5. I think we lost like 10-2 and 8-1. We lost in 6 games. It's still to this day, Darren, it's still to this day an NHL record for a 6-game series in Stanley Cup history. I think there were 64 goals in those 6 games. Now, plus minus is overrated. I'm just letting you know that just for the record in case you want to pull one of your stunts there and like, so you were minus 7. And yeah, well, you know what? They had Gretzky and Messier and Curry and Coffey and Fierzy and all those guys. But like to me, playing against Wayne Gretzky, and I was getting to the story, I think during that series, I got in there to take a face-off against Gretz. And even before I could put my stick down, and there is video, and it might be in black and white, but even before I got put my stick down, I think it might have been Ron Finn or Scampi, Ray Scampanello. He tossed me out of there. And I'm like, what the hell is this? I go, and I remember saying this, and I know Gretz wasn't happy. I got kicked out of the faceoff. I just, for breathing, I got kicked out. And I'm like, what is this guy, own the league? And then Gretz kind of give me, you know, a quick little, you know, F-bomb and whatever. And I mean, I don't know. I didn't know what the hell to say. I'm like, I just wanted to take a draw against Wayne Gretzky, and I got tossed out. And I'm like, well, he threw me out of there because he's the greatest player in the world, right? So I'm not sure if Gretz knows who I am, but you know what? Any team that I can be on, and I'm on there with 99, as I said, I've only used this a couple of times, Darren. I used it at the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver. I used it at when I saw the Triple Crown with American Pharoah a couple of years ago. To be on a team with the great one, it is indeed tremendously tremendous.
Two Titans, and I'm not talking about the hockey sticks facing off against each other. Eddie Olczyk in the broadcasting world and Wayne Gretzky now teaming up at Turner. Hey, normally, I'm at fault for going long with you, but this one's on you today.
Yeah, well, you know what? And let's just get this out there because... Look, I know somebody must have canceled on you. Like, I mean,
oh,
it had to be Lawless in Order. It had to be Nick Kiprios. It had to be Glenn Healy. You know, I think JD, John Davidson's a little busy right now. I mean, the greatest analyst in all of hockey goes to the St. Louis Blues, becomes the team president, allows me to take his seat next to Doc Emrick. JD goes to Columbus. JD goes to the Rangers. Then he gets fired and he goes back to Columbus. So I'm sure JD was scheduled and he couldn't because they're trying to figure out what the hell they're going to do with the coach in Columbus. So I am glad I can be a long reliever for you, Darren. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in Vegas sooner than later. But yes, I will take another minus for going a little long on the chirp because all I ever see, look at all these great names that are on the chirp, 48, 49, 50 deep. And I'm like, well, geez, I know Darren has my cell because he wants a winner at the Derby. He wants a horse to play at the Preakness. He wants, you know, he wants to make a little cash on the side. And all of a sudden I get the call. Let's see, about 12 hours ago going, hey, would you like to be on the show? Cause you know, JD canceled on us and you know, so I am proud to be on your show. And I just wanted to make sure all your viewers and listeners were able to hear transparency and honesty from yours truly.
I wish we had more time, but we don't.
I'll put another quarter in this iPad. And maybe we can go for 5 minutes.
Thanks, Eddie.
All right, Darren. See you, pal.
That's a rant that was directed right at me. Like that was, and Bob Bender. Like we are partners in this podcast. People see me and my Star Wars shirt, but they don't see you. They hear you. Just back me up here. I'm not going to tell you what to say, but is Eddie right or wrong that somebody canceled?
Who's going to cancel on Darren Millard?
I know.
Right. And quite frankly, who's going to cancel on Bob Bender when I shoot an email out? Okay. And I'm coming from the National Hockey League Shield. You don't cancel on me or say no. So that's not what happened. Edzo, of course, is the best analyst in the sport, in my opinion, humble opinion. Mm-hmm. And the ever changing nature of the playoff storylines, we wait till the very last moment to book the guests. So it's relevant and up to snuff. And so we shot Edzo a little email last night. I did. And, you know, he took it as if bottom of the totem pole. And that's just not fair.
No, he was on that theme from the very start, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, right. He responded to my email saying, oh, well, someone must have canceled on you because why are you emailing me right now about 12 hours before the interview? Not the case, Edzo. And so happy he was able to join. And then, you know, of course, with the news, him heading over to Turner and Gretzky and my favorite play-by-play guy, Kenny Albert. So great timing and was so happy to have him on.
And he also listens to the chirp. Because he was rattling off everything and he knows exactly what's going on in this podcast. So if Edzo's listening to the chirp, smash that like button, subscribe, give us your opinion on it. We've had some great feedback lately. Next week, I would like to do some Twitter responses as well as read some of the feedback that we're getting on the various platforms, YouTube and iTunes, and some of those news and notes that we're receiving, because there's some outstanding responses coming. And we're also going to chat next week with a fellow Olympian. Come to think of it, Eddie played in 1984, and Megan Duggan is an Olympian, a gold medalist, and she will join us because she has a brand new job with the New Jersey Devils, an outstanding opportunity. So we are going to chat with her about the player development role with the New Jersey Devils, and I can't wait to bring you that conversation. But nobody cancels on the chirp. In fact, we're working ahead right now as we work our way through these Stanley Cup playoff days. For Bob Bender, Bob, this is always a super pleasure, and it almost gets me emotional every time I have to say goodbye to an episode, but you do a wonderful job. I don't tell you that enough.
Well, thank you, Darren. I think you make it easy. I always CC you on those notes, and I don't think Edzo is, he probably would cancel on me. He's not canceling on Darren and declining you, but we're going to have to effort Gretzky now, right? We got to get Gretz on. So in fact, I'm going to, Steve Mayer, chief content officer, he's tight with Gretzky. I'm going to go through Steve Mayer. So the pressure's on him to deliver Gretzky on this podcast in the next month or so. So that has to happen.
That will be the ultimate test of the power of the chirp with Darren Millard. 99. We've got a couple of Gretzky sweaters around here, so I don't know whether that'll make a difference, but we'll make it a shrine to them. Again, smash that like button. Send us your comments, your reviews. Make sure you subscribe. It's where all the movers and shakers in the world of hockey hang out. The Chirp Podcast with Darren Millard.